Support for WGLT's Grow comes from FS Custom Turf by Evergreen FS. FS Custom Turf offers complete lawn and tree care services to preserve the health of yards, trees, and shrubs. Products and services detailed at evergreen-fs.com.
Propagating and wintering over some of your garden plants is a great way to add to the beauty of your yard and not spend a lot of money. This is WGLT's Gardening Podcast Grow with our expert Patrick Murphy from Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences. He's also curator of the Fell Arboretum. Patrick, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Mike. Nice talking to you.
So we have a question from a listener, Sarah Dolan of Normal, about propagating or lifting some of her favorite flowers.
And she has a long list, and we'll get to that. But the plants that can be propagated come from rhizomes, bulbs, tubers, root stolons, corms, bulbs, and bulblets. These are all horticultural terms for rooting structures of perennial flowering plants we all adore. Some of the terms are common, where some are reserved for your snooty horticulturists and botanists, your professional growers, your overpaid gardeners and landscapers. It's plant geek lingo.
Like root stolons? I don't know what those are.
Yeah, root stolons, they kind of look like you take your hand and let your fingers and your thumb hang down. The little appendages look like they're shaped like green beans. Knowing how your favorite flowering plant grows can help you get the greatest potential from your flowers, because you're going to have to dig this stuff up at the right time of the year to preserve that growth and that energy for seasons to come.
So what does Sarah want to know?
Sarah would like to know how to lift and propagate a list of particular flowers she's growing in her garden. I think it's interesting because Sarah's list consists of flowering and foliage accent plants that many gardeners buy and plant as annual additions to their pots and gardens, but you can resave and replant these by lifting them in preparation known as overwintering. The list is not exotic, but they are from a list of flowering and foliage accent plants that are usually introduced into the garden in the form of live plants grown by someone else. And in particular, we're going to talk about anemones, crocus, and crocus sativa that the culinary spice saffron comes from. Dahlia, ranunculus, and caladium round out Sarah's list of specific plants.
So I've packed away dahlia and caladium tubers and wintered over cannas and ran into some problems we can talk about in a moment. But is the approach to any of these much different, a canna rhizome over storing a dahlia tuber? Is it significantly different?
There's small differences. The general task at hand is very much alike for all of them. So let's talk about the canna, caladium, and dahlias. They share the same overwintering strategy. Once these plants have been touched by the cold, you'll know it because they'll turn a brown to yellowish color. And that's a signal to dig up the root structure and gently remove the soils that are still attached. So you're going to place them somewhere where the squirrels won't carry them off, where the coyotes won't carry them off or whatever, and then let them kind of dry after these loose soils have been knocked off. So for these three plants, in the early fall, so we talked about the cold changing the color of the leaves. So in the fall, you would dig them up and gently knock off the soil and store them in dry peat moss or dry vermiculite in a cool, dry location. Don't let this freeze. Don't let it rot by means of too much moisture. That's what's important about the packing medium, being the dry peat moss or the vermiculite. That's there to help absorb any kind of moisture that comes with time and the shrinkage of what you're saving. Another approach is to propagate your own plants through the ones that you've already planted and added to your garden or pots.
And for Sarah's plants, is the propagation process significantly different for any of these plants?
The same as the other one. In the early spring, before new growth emerges, so this is real early. We're talking late February or early March. As the new growth starts to emerge, dig around the root mass edges and then try and dig beneath so that the whole root mass can be lifted from the ground. And this is especially the case if you're in a temperate zone without frost. Once the root mass is lifted from the ground, again, you're going to knock off the loose soils carefully. And now for older, larger root masses, they can be dug at the edge and then physically divided with the garden forks or double fork or a bulb fork. Once it's been replanted, you'd water it in to ensure there's no air pockets, and then lightly fertilize with like a 5-10-5 or a 13-13-13 at the rate of about 2 pounds per 100 square feet, or even easier to understand is that's about 2 teaspoons per plant site.
So is this propagation process, is this any different than dividing daylilies or hostas in the spring?
It is different. And what's different is, first thing we can say is daylilies and hostas are like, they're tough. You can butcher a daylily. You could cut it in half on the 4th of July and replant it, and it might wilt and take the rest of that growing season to recover. Same is true for the hosta. You can get away with a lot with these two particular garden plants. But you have to be a little more sensitive to the timing on Sarah's list. So the task is the same. Sensitivities to timing and all that are much greater with Sarah's list.
Well, also, you know, wintering over or propagating is certainly more economical if you really want to plant a lot of things in your yard.
Yeah, and you can also get as good or better results when you propagate your own. So you're not starting from zero. So rhizomes, tubers, stolons, corms, all that stuff, they can start off really small. And then when you dig one up that's been in the ground for 2 or 3 years, you compare that to what you started with, you've turned 1 into 3 or 1 into 4.
So when I packed away tubers and rhizomes for the winter, the first year I put them in peat moss and vermiculite, a mixture, but I put them in Ziploc baggies, and I bet you can guess the result.
So there was no hole in that baggie?
Nope.
Yeah, so that was probably the only minor detail that caused you to have lack of success, let's call it. So I try and draw on other experiences to make an example. If you bought rhubarb or asparagus starts in the mail, they come in a paper envelope, but inside that paper envelope is usually a little tiny bag with tiny holes in it. And when you open up the envelope, some of that dust comes and hits you in the face because that dried particulates coming out through those holes, along with the moisture that's being released by that root structure as it dries.
And the second year, I used shoeboxes with holes in the lid, but I just don't think the basement was cool enough. And I just didn't have a good place to store them that seemed cold enough. Do you have any suggestions for, you know, where to store this stuff in a modern airtight home?
A lot of households are energy-saving households now that have high-efficiency appliances, so there's no longer the milk refrigerator in the garage where earthworms and catfish bait and extra gallons of milk are kept, because I grew up in a house like that. That's where some of that stuff was kept. And I also know here at Illinois State, the real live scientists that are working with plants and saving plant parts, they're using a small dorm refrigerator that someone was going to throw away. So that's one way of doing it. And I also learned that the old styrofoam cooler with the lid that blows off at the slightest breeze, that's a good vessel to put on the floor in your garage to maintain a consistent temperature. And that lid that rests on that styrofoam cooler, it does release some of the water vapor that is going to be released from your rooting structure during the winter while you've got it stored.
If you have any questions or comments about wintering over plants or propagating plants or anything in the garden or landscape, get in touch, and Patrick Murphy with Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences will answer them. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your questions to wglt.org/grow.